Okay, welcome to December 2 on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. It is I, your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because history is important. You see, one of humanity's flaws is trying to get somewhere not knowing where we came from, and we just wind up going in circles and repeating mistakes of the past. So yeah, history is important. Hey, don't forget to check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson, and let me know what you think about today's ep. This is an interactive show, folks, so get involved. Your comments and questions are highly appreciated, so thanks for that. I assembled this podcast in a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. If you're looking to move to the area or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now let's begin the show as we customarily do with a Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags if we have one, put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. And now on to today's headlines. We'll wish a happy anniversary to Theodore and Edith Roosevelt. Plus, 1828, the Democrats win the first election. And perhaps most importantly, Pez candy gets patented. All right, so now let's get started. 1886, happy anniversary, Theodore and Edith Roosevelt. Edith was actually Teddy's second wife. She knew him pretty much her whole life, and she was best friends with his sister Connie, and besides, their fathers worked closely together in the shipping business. Teddy and Edith actually dated briefly as teenagers, but he went on to Harvard, and he started dating somebody that he would wind up marrying. Her name was Alice Hathaway, but she tragically died while giving birth to their only child. That child, Alice Jr., would grow up to become a famous writer who had a very rocky marriage with future Speaker of the House and Republican Ohio Senator Nicholas Longworth III. But the only child she would have would be a girl named Paulina, and she was conceived from an affair that Alice Jr. had with Idaho Senator William Edgar Boran. But getting back to Edith. Edith, who was actually at the wedding between Teddy and Alice Sr., seemed to have a good attitude towards the couple. But after Alice died, it would still obviously take some time for Teddy to recover, and he did so by giving the baby to his sister so he could do what Teddy did best: hunt, fish, live in the wilderness. He and Edith rekindled their relationship after a couple of years and tied the knot on this day in 1886. Edith raised little Alice Jr. as well as the other kids that she had with Teddy. So let's talk about that, starting with Theodore Jr. Theodore Jr. would probably be best known directing troops during World War II at the Utah Beach during the Normandy invasion, where he was given a Medal of Honor posthumously. Kermit Roosevelt, not to be confused with the grandson of FDR who wrote Operation Ajax, which was a CIA attempted coup d'etat in Iran. This Kermit Roosevelt was a hunter and explorer like his father, and served in both world wars. Next, in 1891, Edith Jr. was born, aka the Queen of Oyster Bay, by her Long Island fellow residents. She would be instrumental in preserving her parents' home, Sagamore Hill. Fifth child, Archibald, born 1894, served and was wounded in both world wars, and later became the successful founder of a New York City bond brokerage house, as well as a conservative speaker. Finally, the last Roosevelt child would be Quentin, a bold and daring pilot during World War I. Quentin, who died in aerial combat over France on Bastille Day in 1918, remains the only child of a U.S. president to die in combat. Teddy and Edith both loved to read. Legend has it, they both read a book every single day. His interest leaned toward science and tech, and she was more artistic, which Teddy called a taste superior to his own. Teddy was a man of many talents. He was a ranch owner, amateur collector of insects and plants, and a skilled writer. He also became a national hero during the Spanish-American War under the command of William McKinley when he charged his rough-and-ready regiment up San Juan Hill. Telescope Teddy, the happy warrior, also showed gallantry as he charged up his own career ladder, going from New York governor to vice president under McKinley to president, all within 3 years. Obviously, McKinley's assassination helped him to move up to presidency, but that is an entirely different story. And when that happened, Edith went to work right away on the White House. Remember, the Roosevelts were a big family, and by now, the kids were growing up and having families of their own, so the White House would need to be expanded. First of all, the downstairs was only used for presidential ceremonies and other business, and the upstairs was for the First Lady and the fam. T.R. and Edith did a little demolition and expansion and created what we now call the West Wing. That's where all the presidential stuff goes down. The East Wing, which looked like a hotel lobby, was repainted with white and gold trim, and more portraits of George Washington were placed pretty much in the same configuration that we see it today. Edith also ordered the presidential letterhead to read the White House for the first time. The parties at the White House were plentiful, but not expensive, since the president was using his own salary to fund them. Edith was quiet and had an easy temper, but also had a reputation for being frosty, which often made people nervous. After TR's presidency was over, Edith would travel extensively all around the world. She wrote a book called Cleared for Strange Ports, if you want to know more about her family. Later on, she would have to explain to America that the Democrat running for president named Franklin Roosevelt was not her son. Edith passed away September 30th, 1948. Despite her often cold nature, Edith Roosevelt is considered one of the most elegant first ladies, second only to perhaps Jacqueline Kennedy. Happy anniversary, Teddy and Edith! In 1828, the Democrats win their first election. Old Hickory Andrew Jackson squared off in a vicious rematch from 1824 against current president Publicola John Quincy Adams. Insults on both sides were high. Biased newspapers were furiously publishing on both political sides. The Southern Democrats didn't trust JQA stealing the election from Jackson in 1824, and supporters of Adams didn't trust Jackson and labeled him as a murderer. In the election of 24, Jackson won both the popular vote as well as the electoral, but since nobody won a majority, the election went to the House of Representatives, who chose Adams. It was widely believed that House Speaker Henry Clay influenced the election, and when Adams won the presidency, Clay was chosen as Secretary of State in what became known as the Corrupt Bargain, which I talked about yesterday. As president, Jackson would come up with the spoils system, which was basically the same thing. But for now, Jackson was furious, and before he returned to Tennessee, he was already getting the support he needed to revisit the next election. The Democratic-Republican Party began to split after the election of 1824, with Jacksonian factions in the South supporting agriculture and a leader for the common man, and the National Republicans in the North supporting modern industrialization. The Whig Party supported a strong federal system through the powers of Congress, as well as economic protectionism, namely a central bank. Jacksonians distrusted a national bank, and the stage was being set for the upcoming bank wars. Industrialization would be needed to provide internal roadways and canals, as well as a decent public school system. Supporters of JQA personally attacked Jackson during the campaign, calling him a war criminal and executioner for allegedly killing 6 unarmed British soldiers in cold blood who had surrendered during the War of 1812. Coffin pamphlets were a propaganda newspaper piece published to describe the 6 soldiers and featured a poem calling him out. Old Hickory was also called an adulterer, and those were fighting words. That insult was so disrespectful, Jackson once got into a duel over it. Now, during the campaign, wife Rachel began to have chest pains, possibly because of that insult. Folks from the Whig Party also supported freeing black slaves and giving them the right to vote, which was just ridiculous back then and would be until the Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. Meanwhile, the insults continued, and at one point, Adams supporters even called Jackson's mother a prostitute. But the insults wouldn't affect the outcome in Adams' favor. In fact, Jackson had support in northern states as well, such as Pennsylvania, and a very devoted friend who just happened to be the senator from New York named Martin Van Buren. Finally, the ugliness came to a stop on this day in 1828, as Old Hickory easily defeated JQA in the first victory for the new Democratic Party, as a man for the common folks became leader of the country. But the victory took its toll on wife Rachel, who had died before her husband's inauguration. Nonetheless, the victory for Jackson was so huge, there was a party that turned so crazy that the White House became Animal House for one night. Jacksonian Democrats would dominate over the Whigs until 1840, with Jackson winning in 1832 and his very devoted friend Van Buren in 1836. 1952, Pez candy gets a U.S. patent. About time. I believe the candy started in Austria. The name Pez supposedly came from Pfefferminz, the German word for peppermint, actually designed for adult smokers who were trying to kick the habit. In 1935 in Czechoslovakia, inventor Oskar Uksa developed a metal tin that dispensed the candy. In the early 50s, Pez operations moved to New York City and got the patent on this day in 1952. In 1957, a 3D style head was placed on top of the dispenser, first one being a Halloween witch, and the second, Popeye, the Sailor Man. These days, of course, every head imaginable from Mickey Mouse to Han Solo to Bugs Bunny to Super Mario to the New York Yankees are on there. Just lift the head and out comes another yummy candy faster than babies popping out of Denise Richards. Chances are, you've had at least one dispenser in your lifetime. Nowadays, you can check out the Burlingame Pez Museum just 10 minutes from the San Francisco airport. Gary and Nancy Doss have been collecting Pez dispensers since the mid-1980s, and in 1995 opened up the museum. They claim to have every unique Pez dispenser ever. One of these days, if I'm ever in the area, I'll probably go in there and count just to double check. Who's with me? Anyone? Anyone? Give you extra credit for class. And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for December 2nd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, it is I, your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, as well as the Facebook page. Let me know what you thought about today's episode. For instance, did you wish Teddy and Edith a happy anniversary? It's okay, I didn't either. They've been dead a long time now. So yeah, let me know what your take is. And don't miss tomorrow's program. I'll talk about the state of Illinois, plus Pearl Harbor Part 1, computer programming, and we'll wish a happy birthday to George McClellan. So don't miss that. Until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. We'll see you tomorrow.